This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Last year's election laid bare stark divisions between urban and rural areas of the United States, and North Carolina was no exception. A new report from the Chronicle of Higher Education looks at the history of this divide in this state and how higher education played a role. In the 1950s, big research universities and the creation of Research Triangle Park helped turn North Carolina's economy around, but they also created an economic and political gap that appears to be widening to this day. Joining me now is reporter Karen Fisher. She writes for the Chronicle of Higher Education. Karen, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks for having me.
This story has been percolating, I understand, for quite some time, at least since election night last year. But tell us why you decided to look at North Carolina to examine this question.
You know, I think there were two reasons. You're right in identifying the election, and we're interested not because we wanted to sort of, delve into and pick apart the electoral results, but just because of what they said to us about economics and education. And we certainly saw these kind of divides really across the country. But North Carolina, they both seemed particularly stark, but also I think for us, we were really attracted to exploring it because of North Carolina's really long history of being, you know, a place that invests in and values higher education.
Yeah, take us back to not only higher education, because we know that the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, of course, the first publicly funded university to admit students in the country, but that goes way back. But you can go back as far as the 1950s and look at the development of Research Triangle Park as well. Tell us about that and how those two things, both higher education and RTP, kind of work together.
Well, Research Triangle Park is interesting because it really represents the first time that not just higher education, people within the industry itself, within universities, but elected officials, business leaders, all kind of came together and saw education and sort of knowledge production as sort of as an economic driver. And so it was a very deliberate strategy. Up to that point, any kind of places that had sprung up, communities that had sprung up and were driven largely by sort of research and knowledge, were kind of coincidental. And Research Triangle Park really represented the first time where people came together and said, okay, let's look around. What have we got here? The economy is not doing well. Per capita income is low. How can we get out of this? Well, look, we have these three powerhouse research universities. How can we take advantage of their clustering and really try to attract and grow businesses and that will be that will want to come to a place that is going to be close to universities and the people that they have in them.
A bold strategy at the time for any place in the country, but particularly the South, which is not a region in the 1950s that was known for its advances in education and research. And initially, it was not immediately successful, but ultimately proved so. Tell us about that trajectory.
You're right about that. And in part, I think you're also accurate in identifying the challenge that just being in the South in that time when, you know, obviously the whole country was wrestling with things like racial segregation. That was one of the hurdles that that Research Triangle Park faced in getting off the ground. And you know, another was just, again, that this was an unheard of idea. Wait, you're going to just take some empty land and build this technology park? Why should we come? And, you know, it was a very big challenge. At one point, the founders of the park had to borrow money to keep going. But they eventually got the first tenants. And I think it's always important. People can be risk averse in companies and higher education as well. And so they got their first tenants, private tenant IBM and public tenant, the federal government, the U.S. Department of Health. And I think once other companies saw that people were willing to take a bet and that they could see benefits, then slowly over time and in larger and larger numbers, they came to Research Triangle Park.
And it developed. Now, even at that time, there would have been, if we had done some or taken any measurements, we would have noticed that rural areas are not doing as well, both in terms of education, the percentage of people, let's say, with a college degree, or economic development. Do we have an idea of what the divide was like in the 1950s and how it has changed?
The divide was there, but in some ways in the 1950s, it wasn't as deep because of, you know, of the unique sort of structure of North Carolina's economy, where I think people perhaps outside of the state and perhaps even in the state would think of of hear the word manufacture and they think, you know, smokestacks and soot and a very urban idea. Back then, you were still seeing a lot of manufacturing in rural areas and things like textiles and furniture making. And so the divide wasn't nearly as stark then, but Research Triangle Park, I think, really represents kind of, you know, the fork in the road, so to speak, in which that area, as well as Charlotte, of course, went in one direction, and the rest of North Carolina kind of, if not went in the other direction, certainly was getting left further behind.
Let's talk about the connection then between higher education and economic development. Certainly now in this state, you can see those places where there is this kind of research in higher education, definitely a place where there's stronger economic development. But that masks something that you point out in your report, which is that even nationally, there's not a strong correlation between colleges and universities being in your backyard and economic mobility, right?
Yeah, that is true. And so we looked both at the rural-urban divide and the sort of internal divide within urban areas. And even there, I think you could argue that higher education in some ways can exacerbate things because all the things that make a city a more desirable place and a wealthier place to live do things that disadvantage poorer people as well. You know, the cost of housing can rise and just the general cost of living. But I think all that said, I mean, and certainly it's true, I mean, within North Carolina, you can look at social mobility within urban areas, and it's among the worst in the country. But there's also those urban-rural divides that are pretty notable as well.
And tell us about that. I mean, I think it's an unintended consequence of the development of research universities, but they have made things worse in terms of widening that gap. How so?
You know, that's precisely it. I mean, I think we always talk about the benefits of higher education and the traumatic effect it can have both on an individual and on a local economy and their futures. But the fact is that what happens with a successful place like Research Triangle Park is success draws success. And so if you were a company thinking about coming to North Carolina, and you were particularly a company that was attracted to having well-educated people to work at your firm, you are probably going to end up coming to Research Triangle Park, and then your company would perhaps spin off other companies. You would maybe hire more people. And having all of that success, you know, through agglomeration helps the places that already are ahead get further ahead and has the unfortunate consequence of making it that much more difficult for the other places to catch up. I mean, I think sort of the analogy would be, you know, moth to a flame, right? And the rest of the places is sort of not in the same amount of light.
And you may even be drawing. So not only are you attracting people from outside the state to settle mostly in those regions, RTP, Charlotte, Greensboro, you may be attracting people from the state, a kind of brain drain from the rural areas, again, to go to those areas and leave even parts of North Carolina.
It's exactly it. I mean, I think if you look at Raleigh, it was attracting at 1.65 people a day, and that certainly some of them were coming from out of state, but many of them were coming from elsewhere.
So the obvious conclusion here is if you want to end the divide between rural and urban wealth, you can close those universities. And since I'm guessing that is not the conclusion that we should come to, what is the solution, and can universities be part of the solution?
You know, obviously, the solution is not an easy one. It's something I want to say that people within the state understood. I mean, you know, a decade ago prior to the recession, Erskine Bowles then, you know, had ordered a sort of commission to really explore these issues and really said we have to just sort of stop thinking that things can just happen, and we have to take a more proactive, a more aggressive approach. But obviously, the recession really hurt any of those kinds of actions. And you know, now I think you see individual, both universities and individual communities, kind of embracing the notion that they need to work together, that it can't just be that a university is there and or you have, say, a community college even, and thus, presto, economic growth, that it's going to take a lot more of people working together.
A lot more. It's not a trickle-down effect. It has to be very intentional and comprehensive. You point to one example by one of the premier private institutions in the state that at least shows some promise for the future, the East Durham Children's Initiative and Duke University.
Yeah, I mean, and that, this, of course, is an example of an urban, an urban area of poverty and an urban program to address it. But they kind of realized that if the end result, you couldn't start with the end result. That's just the last piece, which is, of course, to get more people into college, because we know that is something that for both a community and for an individual is really going to better their quality of life. But you can't start at college. And so, when I spoke with the folks at the East Durham Children's Initiative, they haven't even, their oldest participants are only in the seventh grade. They're starting back before those children are even born with things like maternal health, and then working on pre-K interventions and, extra tutoring and summer academic camps during elementary school into junior high. And, eventually they'll be thinking about how to, help students access financial aid and advise them on college. But right now, it's really supposed to be a womb to diploma kind of effort, and they're still at the earlier stages of that.
Karen, I'm going to stop you there. And of course, there are initiatives at East Carolina University as well, where we see these kind of more comprehensive approach. Thank you so much for your article, Karen Fisher, senior reporter for the Chronicle of Higher Education. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Links to her work at our website, stateofthings.org. There's more on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.